the Knife, the surgery podcast. Relevant and engaging content designed to help you dominate the day.
Hey, BTK listeners, want to feel more confident in the OR? Check out our surgical instrument flashcards. With over 300 instruments, these cards are packed with key tips, subtle distinctions, and insider tricks you usually pick up after years in the OR. Perfect for students, surgical technologists, or anyone prepping to scrub a case. You can find them in your library on the Behind the Knife app or at behindtheknife.org. Test your knowledge, share them with your learners, and as always, dominate the day.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Behind the Knife. We've got our UW Wisconsin Endocrine Surgery team here for another episode to discuss adrenal cases today. So my name is Amanda Doubleday. I'm a fellowship-trained endocrine surgeon affiliated with University of Wisconsin Health, practicing in both Waukesha and Madison, Wisconsin. We have Dr. Simon Hullebeck here, also a fellowship-trained endocrine surgeon affiliated with University of Wisconsin Health, practicing both in Northern Illinois and Madison, Wisconsin. Thanks for being here, Simon.
Great to be here with you today.
And for our senior guest and expert surgeon, we've got Dr. John Porterfield, a previous professor at University of Alabama. And thanks for being here, Dr. Porterfield. I understand you've had some changes in your practice recently.
Yes, Amanda, thanks so much. I appreciate it, Simon. Yeah, so I retired from UAB a year ago and founded a private practice focused on endocrine surgery here in Birmingham. And I've also continued Inform Surgical, which was a company that I founded with Sal Bronya, who designed the Da Vinci robot back. He and I founded a company called Informed in 2021 that matches patients with surgeons based on their risk-adjusted outcomes.
Great. All right. Well, Simon, you want to jump into a couple of cases here?
So our focus is going to be on adrenal disease today. Cushing's with adrenal origin is a challenging topic, especially in a population like the United States where obesity is incredibly common. However, it's an important topic with a lot of incidental findings that we have in modern medicine. And I think it's really up to endocrinologists and endocrine surgeons to help provide sound advice for patients as they undergo functional workups. Let's get into our first case. I have a 45-year-old female with type 2 diabetes, osteopenia, and a BMI of 41 who had a recent CT chest, abdomen, and pelvis after NVC. No injuries were found, and she was discharged after a brief stay and was told to follow up with a surgeon because she was found to have a 2.5-centimeter right adrenal nodule. So she came to my office. She would have a dedicated CT adrenal and a workup consisting of aldosterone, renin, serum metanephrines, DHEA sulfate, ACTH, and a low-dose dexamethasone test to determine if she has a properly suppressed cortisol. I'd say for the purposes of this case, let's just say her workup is unremarkable except for a dexamethasone-suppressed cortisol level of 2.9 and a suppressed ACTH. Dr. Porterfield, what's your diagnosis at this point, and how would you approach this patient?
Yeah, this is, and I think this is really a timely patient scenario because, you know, Alabama is one of, if not the most obese states in America. And so we see a tremendous amount of patients like this that set up with basically an incidental OMA with obesity, and then they get a proper workup. And we see that this is, you know, hypercortisolism with an adrenal source with a suppressed ACTH. So I'm pretty old school. From my training at Mayo, I'll get a 24-hour urine in all of these patients. So I really like to see an elevated 24-hour urine cortisol. It's over 300, then I'm really convinced that we don't need to repeat a DEXA or something like that because I'm pretty skeptical and I have a low threshold to repeat studies. But with that and confirming that it's a adrenal in origin, I think it's really important as endocrine surgeons to look at to be a fantastic adrenal radiologist and to really carefully examine that other gland. If I'm perfectly confident that other adrenal gland is perfectly normal, like it's just skinny as a rail, it doesn't have a single abnormal bump on it, and I'm going to have a lower threshold to just go right ahead. And I forget if you said which side, but I would remove the side that had the 2.5-centimeter mass
Yeah, right side. Yep.
So I would probably move pretty quickly to a robotic right adrenalectomy, lateral transperitoneal, and I would have a very clear discussion with the family. I want to hear them like teach it back to me that they could not be cured. That's the absolute critical step here that I cannot guarantee them just off of those imaging results. But I'd love to chat about adrenal vein sampling for hypercortisolism too.
Sure, let's get into that.
Yeah, it's been a hot topic. So I think that it's where I sit. I think that it's, I don't do it in every scenario. If we added a 1 centimeter nodule to the contralateral side, right, I'd probably do it. Obviously we've been deep in the data, many conversations with Herb and Vanessa and Sophie and the whole team down here. But I think there's a piece that's missed in the data and those studies. And that, what does it mean for the patient? You know, what are the nuances in the conversation in that we've done all that we can do? Is there anything else we could do to help decide, should we take out the right? Should we take out the left? Do we take out the right because it's big? You know, those type of things. So I really think it adds to the conversation tremendously. And then I feel like I'm giving too long of an answer, but it's the other piece I really look for is, do we have any other imaging? We found this one because of a motor vehicle crash, you know, traumas over current disease. You know, I'd love to be able to see some old CT scans. And so I'm a big fan of, like, I'll dig up CT scans from a decade ago to look at them.
Let's say for the purposes of this case, there was an old CT scan and it wasn't, you know, it had bilateral normal adrenals at the time. So this is a new finding just in the last, you know, 12 months.
Yeah, it 100% comes out and I would not pursue any adrenal vein sampling. Anything that grows by a half a centimeter a year in a low risk surgical patient or even a moderate risk surgical patient, I've never been accused of watching adrenal tumors too long. So, and I tell patients that I'm a surgeon. I'm biased toward taking it out. And I have a low threshold to take things out whenever we can do it in a low risk way.
Amanda, would you do anything different here? Would you also favor a robotic approach?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm most comfortable with that. When I was in fellowship, we did a lot of laparoscopic cases. And when I started at my new job here, after I finished, learned robotics, found it was extremely helpful in many ways for both me and the patient. Obviously, surgeon ergonomics, but I also found patients had a lot less pain. So I don't know what we were doing with lap cases, that maybe just more torque on the ports, but a lot of patients had pain control issues. And once I started doing them robotic, I found that elderly patients, even who weren't even great shape, were like, had received no pain medication, were ready to go even the same day or the next day.
I also find that, you know, my interest in converting to open when I have you know, the robot docked in the patient is just so much different, because I never think that opening, or rarely think that opening, is going to somehow make my case easier, just because the robot is, you know, is so good and adds so much to the case that I also favor the robotic approach.
Yeah, I've looked at our experience, and I've done over 350 robotic adrenals now, and I've never opened an adrenal. And for that matter, I've never opened a robotic case. So I think that it's really important from a perspective of, like, there was always an option to open lap cases because laparoscopy is so limited. And there's just so little that you can do with severe torrential bleeding. There's so little you can do with, like, big tumors and, you know, difficult anatomy. And, you know, as you cross through each kind of tier of cases, like 500, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 and more cases, I'm shocked at how I'm still getting better, like thousands of cases in, where I felt like I had definitely reached a plateau quicker in lap. You know, the conversion to open is just, it's just not the question. The question is what are my resources? Who else is around? You know, and I've leaned on G1 oncologists, urologists, and thoracic surgeons, who are the best robotic surgeons you know, in my world, and with them around, you know, I'll let them know. It's just like with a giant goiter, I would let the thoracic surgeon know. It's like, hey, I might need to open the chest. Do I open the chest very often to take out a thyroid? No. But it's always good to know that Ben Way's around the corner, right? But, you know, the same thing with these, with robotic procedures. And I would add one other thing too. I mean, like we're really biased here on the talk about doing these robotically. I am a huge believer in surgeons doing them exactly the way they are best. And I think the worst adrenal surgeons in the country would be surgeons that have like six ways to do this operation. Because even if they did 60 a year, they would only do 10 maybe with each of their approaches. So if you're going to do them retroperitoneally, do them all retroperitoneally. But don't do 30 retroperitoneally and do 5 transperitoneal because they're too obese to do it through the back. Because those patients aren't going to get the same operation. There's just no way. Versus if you're the retroperitoneal surgeon and it can't be done retroperitoneally, then give it to the person that can do it lateral transperitoneal robotic. It's just, you know, we should not be so prideful to not, you know, kick them to somebody that is really high volume in that approach that you as a surgeon are experienced with.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think patients appreciate that too. They appreciate the honesty. You know, look,
oh yeah,
this, I don't do it, but I'm going to send you to my partner who does. You'll be in better hands. I do that all the time with other kinds of general surgery cases. So
yeah, I mean, if there's a patient with bilateral adrenal nodules and putting the patient prone and doing it bilaterally or even doing it simultaneously, I sent one to Brunessa and Jess Fazendine and they did it at the same time. You know, Brunessa Lindemann did one side and Jess Fazendine did the other side. You know, it was great, right? And there's no reason for me to flip that patient and do two different operations or split it on 2 days, even worse. So but those cases are rare. So, but it's important to get the patient to the right surgeon.
All right. Amanda, do you want to move into the second case?
Yeah, we can move in. Just one quick comment, though, regarding cortisol tumors before we leave this topic. Just very briefly, if you had somebody with bilateral nodularity and there wasn't one that was really dominant, would you consider doing an adrenalectomy on one side and then a partial on the other to get better control of their cortisol hypersecretion?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Typically, the way I've approached those is to go take out the right first, assuming their abdomen is uniform, they haven't had a bunch of surgery. I would go take the right out. I would do a total on the right. Then, and assuming their adrenal glands look similarly nodular on both sides, I would take out the right first. Then I would want to restudy them at 6 weeks to prove that they still have hypercortisolism. I've seen several patients that just with one side out, their diabetes is way better controlled. They're in much better state and that type of thing. And maybe they don't even need another operation. If we've not made hardly any difference, then that is where I would go and do a subtotal on the left. And the modern energy devices, I've stapled adrenal glands. I've gone through them with, you know, with different types of kind of the wet cautery and stuff like that. And I think that the modern vessel sealer is safe for going through an adrenal gland for a partial adrenalectomy. So long as you use a sealant, the one we use is VistaSeal, but they all work really similarly. I think you have to use a sealant, not a hemostatic. Early in my career, I was just uninformed and I was kind of equating hemostatics with sealants. And I think as adrenal surgeons, if we're going to cut an adrenal, we really need a sealant on it.
Okay, that's a great point. I hadn't thought about that. All right, great. All right, so for time purposes, I'm going to jump into case two right away. So case two, let's say you got a patient who is in the hospital. They were admitted for back pain and found to have a retroperitoneal bleed. They were recently started on anticoagulation for DVT, and now they've been scanned, and they're finding this new incidental finding of a very large, let's say 10 to 12 centimeter, likely adrenal tumor. So first we get the patient through their hospitalization, they get discharged after their HNH is stable, and now they're coming to your office and questioning, what do we do? So obviously we're going to need some repeat imaging after that bleeding has resolved, but And John, we were talking about this. It's kind of about timing. So what would your timing be in terms of re-imaging? And with a tumor that's sort of concerning with this size, what would your timetable ideally look like?
Yeah. So I think there are a lot of factors here. You know, if this is the kind of a typical scenario where this is a 34-year-old female that has an acute hemorrhage into, say, the right adrenal gland, and now she's got a 10-centimeter, you know, hematoma tumor mix. In my mind, that's adrenal cortical carcinoma until proven otherwise. I would definitely want to see if we had any prior imaging that could kind of lower my threshold for believing it's a cancer. Because if we had a CT from 3 or 4 years ago that showed that she had a 3 or 4 centimeter tumor, you know, now I would be thinking less that it's an adrenal cortical cancer. But assuming that all of those things are true, then I'm going to probably push to go ahead and get her into the OR within 4 to 6 weeks. I don't want to operate on the acute bleed immediately. We are often in this scenario, questioning should we embolize these when they come in with active extrav. When I've been involved in those cases with our interventional radiologist, I'm really careful to make sure that they use gel that I can fire a stapler through, as opposed to firing metal coils. And generally, they are using these gels because they're just getting the arteries off of the upper polyrenal artery vessel, or some direct branches off of the aorta, because you really want to be able to use a stapler in these cases. You know, when you get into the OR, these cases are extremely difficult. They're welded onto the diaphragm and the liver or the pancreas and the spleen. They're welded. It doesn't get any easier if you open. I love that, you know, Simon, you and I've talked about that like open surgery doesn't mean easy surgery. Definitely have these patients typed and crossed. I've been in situations where I needed two robotic suction irrigators at different times. I've had to add laparoscopic suction. It can be quite dramatic for the anesthesiologist. In a patient, say that we do get it out and it does pathologically prove to be an adrenal cortical carcinoma, that bleeding event likely triggered metastasis as well. So the chance of local recurrence versus metastatic spread of a hemorrhage to adrenal cortical carcinoma, I think, you know, we're kidding ourselves if we think we're getting every cell out after an ACC bleeds. So I've never done a nephrectomy or an ACC that bled. I've done nephrectomies plenty of times for ACCs that didn't bleed to get a, you know, a big on blocker section. But those are kind of my thoughts on that. If I guess I didn't say if I had a low threshold for it being a cancer, say it occurred in like a 68-year-old man, and we had some prior evidence that it's been there for a while, but it bled into it. Say the tumor's been there for 10 years, it's 6 centimeters, everybody's been ignoring it, but now it bled. I would probably give them a while, like 6 months or more, before I would go back in to take it out, maybe even a year from that standpoint. And that'll be a much easier operation, because once you get beyond 6 months, you can generally pick around the hematoma and take it out en bloc.
Great point. So would you primarily still use a vessel sealer then? Or like what are some of your tips and tricks for when it's like, say, stuck to the diaphragm or stuck to the bed of the liver?
So I start every case with the small Grasfinger retractor, like on the right or left. The small Grasfinger retractor is going to be against the liver or against the pancreas and spleen. And then my right hand is always going to be a hook cautery. And then my left hand is going to be the robotic suction irrigator. And I think it's an absolute critical piece that you don't put a grasper in your left hand, because if you do, you're going to pick stuff up. And what you're going to pick up is going to be the edge of the adrenal. And as soon as you pick up the edge of the adrenal, you're going to create a capsular disruption. And so it is more difficult to operate with just a suction irrigator in your left hand, but you learn to use it like a Kittner, and you learn to spread with it. You know, oftentimes people have the Maryland bipolar and they spread with that, and then they work between it. But you can do the same thing with a suction irrigator. And then you stay with the hook cautery as long as you can. And what that forces you to do, and this is a good conversation, I think, for like, what do you do with like these 16 centimeter tumors? You just pick around them as long as you can. It just go where it's easy, go where it's easy. You don't care about the adrenal vein at all. You just keep going. And I've even told patients that I'm going to do everything I can to mobilize it. And if I can mobilize it, but I can't deal with it, I would open and finish the case open. And what's happened in 100% of those cases is that I was patient. You know, we picked around it and picked around it and picked around it. I let the fellow work. I went to the restroom. I came back. We kept picking on it. Like, we just literally spent several hours, maybe 2 hours, mobilizing an adrenal mass that's big. And then the next thing you know, you get down to something that's very manageable that could be managed with a, you know, with a stapler along the cava or parallel to the renal vein. So, but your question was, do I switch? So the last thing I do is switch to a vessel sealer. When I switch to the vessel sealer, it's either like after the adrenal vein is flipped and now I'm just going through retroperitoneal fat, so it's just super easy, or I've gotten into bleeding. And now I need to be able to move more quickly through larger steps, because now I've established a rate of blood loss. And if, and I may be losing, you know, I may be losing 5 cc's a minute, or I might be losing 30 cc's a minute. And that's a big difference. So I just need to be able to follow the pace of blood loss. And that's why I keep the suction irrigator in there, because I want to suck up every drop of blood that comes out. I don't want any of it pooling in the pelvis, because I want to know what my blood loss is. And, you know, the anesthesiologists tell me every time we cross over 250,
okay,
another 250. So, I mean, I've lost 2 liters of blood in an adrenal, and she went home the next morning. Right. So like, that's crazy, but that's, yeah, we can lose that and replace that very effectively if you're communicating really well with your anesthesiologist.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Great. Well, I'm going to try and quickly talk about a third case here. For the sake of time, we'll move on. Let's say we've got a young female, 40-year-old female. She's got a history of hypertension, but it's pretty well controlled. And there's some sort of retroperitoneal mass that they've seen incidentally on imaging. It's adjacent to the right adrenal, but it appears like it may be separate, and it's sort of behind the IVC. It doesn't appear to be invading, but it's causing a mass effect on the IVC posteriorly and inferiorly. So let's say biochemical workup is pretty normal, except slight elevation in norepinephrines, but metanephrines are normal. So this might make you think that it's a paraganglioma. She's maybe got some episodes of hot flashes with sweating, tachycardia. So it kind of fits the picture. So with a mass being behind the IVC like this, Dr. Porterfield, how would you approach it the same way? Would you get a vascular surgeon involved? Would you alpha blockade this patient?
That's a great question. So, so I would block them with calcium channel blockers and then beta blockers as needed for their tachycardia, in anticipation of running them on IV clavitopine intraoperatively. It can be run peripherally. It can run right next. It can run in line with norepinephrine, levofed. And so that's going to be the biochemical setup. It's 100% coming out, you know, in a medium risk patient, like you described. I put patients full lateral. So in any case, the shoulders are 90 degrees to the floor. The hips tend to be just rocked back just a little bit in a standard adrenal. But in this case, I would set them up just perfectly perpendicular to the floor. And before we dock the robot, I would tilt the patient toward the front of anteriorly, so that I would have even better like gravity pulling either the liver or vice versa if it was pancreas and spleen. But say we're going to the right, I would want that liver held over there. I'm going to mobilize the liver all the way to the cava. So I'm going to expose the right hepatic vein. I'm going to see a ton of it. That's really going to help me get a tremendous amount of space. Initially, I'm going to go find the cava, and I'm going to go find the adrenal vein. I'm going to take the adrenal vein, and I may take the adrenal out if I need to. I may take that adrenal out on that side to provide exposure and access. If I have to mobilize the kidney, I will mobilize the kidney, but that's rare that you have to mobilize the kidney like that. And in this case, once I'm at the periganglioma, I would be using the vessel sealer exclusively. And the one I have now, the new one, has a little curved tip on it. It's a little smaller and it's just magical compared to the big wide vessel sealer that we used to have, because cautery does not work very well. Scissors nor hook works very well at all around these periganglioma. The little fibrous nerve bands are too strong. They're too tight. You're going to get into a decent amount of bleeding. And I would be very generous with how much of the cava I exposed above it and how much of the cava renal vein I exposed below it. I may vessel loop the cava in case I put a hole in it. It's a whole lot easier to pull those vessel loops down. If you double vessel loop it, you could pull it down and put a clip on it if you needed to get total vascular isolation of it. Having unintentionally put holes in the cava, that's traumatic. And I hope y'all don't, but I was very glad I had control of it, because even in that situation, you're still going to have lumbar veins. So it's still going to be pretty intense whenever you have a hole in the cava there. So the cava can handle a tremendous amount of electrocautery on it, as far as like the spread from a bipolar. I learned that from David Nagorny, liver surgeon at Mayo, that he would cauterize right on top of the cava. But it's such high flow that the internal lining of the vein actually doesn't heat up very hot there. So it can actually handle a fair bit of cautery.
Okay, great points. Yeah, I think unfortunately not all of us have access to that skinnier vessel sealer if we don't have the new 5 model. So we're kind of stuck with the big bulky vessel sealers. But yeah, it's still a good point.
All right. Thank you for this fantastic discussion about adrenal pathology and adrenal surgery today. So again, thanks. I am Simon Holobeck, and also here with Amanda Doubleday, as well as our expert senior surgeon, Dr. John Porterfield. And so let's get into some quick hits. Okay. Number one, subclinical Cushing's is now called MAX and remains a controversial topic. Surgery remains the preferred treatment in patients with clinical manifestations of this disease, including diabetes, obesity, osteoporosis, or cardiovascular disease. Two, large adrenal tumors can be successfully removed via minimally invasive approaches. Of course, we talked mostly today about transabdominal approach robotically, and there are certainly experts in the field who are able to do this, and referral is very reasonable if you do not do this. And then third and final, adrenalectomy can be performed open transabdominal via laparoscopic robotic approaches, as well as retroperitoneoscopic approaches. Each appropriate approach can be acceptable in the right hands and in the right clinical setting. Thank you so much. Dominate the day.
Be sure to check out our website at www.behindtheknife.org. Download our free app available for Apple iOS and Android. Simply search for Behind the Knife in the App Store or Google Play to download the app. In the app, you can listen to our episodes, watch high-yield videos, and even access our premium content, including our oral board reviews and trauma video atlas. You can also follow us on Twitter at Behind the Knife and on Instagram at Behind the Knife Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to leave us a review. Content produced by Behind the Knife is intended for health professionals and is for educational purposes only. We do not diagnose, treat, or offer patient-specific advice. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your support.
Until next time, dominate the day.